You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we want to know if you're wearing underwear. Wait for it. It'll pay off eventually, if you listen all the way through Reddit on Reddit. And if you enjoy your trip to the Midside this week, which we really appreciate you joining us, please tell a friend. Referrals are the number one source of tourism here in the Midside. Joining me this trip, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How are you this week, Daniel?
Well, after fighting a bout of food poisoning, I feel like even having a limb hacked off, I would be much better than I was.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, when you disappeared, I applied the Adam Carolla principle, which he always talks about. He's like, you know, if somebody doesn't show up and they usually are communicative, that means there's probably something wrong. I was like, I haven't heard from Daniel in like 3 days. I hope he's not dead.
Yeah, food poisoning won't kill you. You just wish it would.
Yeah.
Because it's the fucking worst. I was basically curled up in the fetal position on my bed, not moving for many, many, many hours, except to make frequent trips into a much smaller room with only one seat in it.
You actually stayed in your bed? That's impressive. The two times I've had food poisoning, I just laid at the foot of the toilet. Because I was like, fuck this.
This is my home now.
Yeah.
When I had food poisoning last, I went airsofting, and people were like, and I was like throwing up on the field, and people were just like, why are you playing airsoft, like, if you're miserable and have food poisoning? And I'm like, well, if I wasn't playing airsoft, I would just be miserable at home. At least I'm miserable while playing airsoft.
I watched almost all of the People versus O.J. Simpson. So, there was that.
Is that a show?
Yes.
No, I was just watching old recordings of the O.J. Simpson trial, reliving the glory days.
That's, I don't know, that seems like valid cultural research.
Man, I thought I was bad doing casting for my web series while with food poisoning.
Yeah, no, I could not muster.
You are not yet the overman.
I could not muster the energy to do anything other than lay perfectly still. Like, if the iPad fell over, I would lay there for about 25 minutes before mustering up enough energy to pick it up.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised you actually made yourself exert the effort to go from the bathroom to the, from the bedroom to the bathroom.
Yeah.
How about the middleman here, man?
The middleman was, bison chili from Ted's Montana Grill. Fuck you, Ted Turner, and your shitty restaurant. And your food. I know it was exactly that because the person I went to dinner with also got food poisoning, and that was the only food that we had that was the same.
Yeah. Oh, God. When I got food poisoning, yeah, my friend also got food poisoning, and he threw up in his bed. Like, he had had this minestrone soup. And he threw up in his bed and ended up with minestrone soup in his hair. And he said, like, dude, I should have just cut out the middleman and poured minestrone soup on my head.
That's funny.
Oh, that would have been less gross. Also, haircut. Yes, that would be.
Right.
Oh, God.
Also joining us this week.
Yeah. You ruined my joke there, Daniel. I was going to say, as you can also already tell, also joining us this week via Skype from the Hills of White Privilege, James Elias. And James, you have lost the right to an introduction here because you've already given your 2 cents on the food poisoning story. And besides, I would much rather just talk about Tom Brady and the Patriots. So why don't we do that in our first news story in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Just a fad. Cause kid, there's consequences to what we say and what we do. While
The Patriots may not have been able to participate in the first round of the NFL draft recently, but what they are participating in is a truth renaissance. Yes. An
Isn't
article on Bleacher Report.
Doesn't a renaissance require truth?
Okay, Captain Philosophy. I'm not here to discuss the meaning of your words. I'm here to report on the news, sir. So, Bleacher Report released an in-depth article basically saying that, look, when the Patriots were penalized for quote-unquote cheating via Deflategate, most of the league could not have been happier. In fact, one front office executive said, when they were busted, I thought, good, the league finally caught those cheating douchebags. Yes, that is an exact quote that I'm reading. But something weird has happened. Something really strange and unexpected, according to this article. I spoke to many of these same sources, 10 interviewed in total, and they have now completely the opposite view. They believe the NFL got the investigation wrong, or mostly wrong, and that the Patriots never cheated. They believe that's the new consensus around the league. Quote, I hate the Patriots. I despise them, said one NFC team executive who, like everyone else in the interview, asked to remain anonymous for fear of angering the league. Quote, but they should really get those picks back. The shift in perception, I'm still reading from the article, of the Patriots and what they did to deserve the loss of these draft picks, in addition to the $1 million fine and a 4-game suspension for Tom Brady, has become one of the biggest stories heading into the draft. This is the key here, though, this paragraph. They think the teams that now believe the Patriots are innocent, or at least were quote-unquote railroaded, which apparently was a word that came up a lot, they think that what happened to the Patriots could happen to any of them. It's not that they have sympathy for the Patriots. It's about fear of Goodell's power. That would be the commissioner of the NFL. If Commissioner Goodell can punish the most influential franchise in football so harshly based on questionable science and investigations, they wonder, what does that mean for the rest of us? Who called this shit?
I would just like to point out that if you go back and you read the Midside report on the Wells report, I believe that was almost the exact last line of what I wrote, word for word.
Pretty phenomenally fucking close.
Maybe we have some midsiders in the NFL.
Well, they are now. Fucking, let's send this podcast to all of them, and they'll be like, wow, these guys are smart. Maybe we should fucking hire them. We'll be like Ernie Adams up in the booth, and nobody will know what the fuck we do. Yeah, no, I said it. The last line was like, if they can come after, and this is me paraphrasing myself, so how fucking arrogant do I sound right now? The last line was something like, if they can go after Tom Brady over the unclear, you know, minor deflation of, or air level of footballs, they can come after any one of us for anything.
Yes. Indeed.
And that's what's part of the story here was they said the Chiefs, they saw that the Chiefs got boned hard for whatever that was. And they got
railroaded.
I like boned better. But railroad is so like, you know, that's so 19th century.
But that makes it sound, I don't like boned because it makes boned sound like a bad thing. It's not like they wanted it from Roger Goodell. They weren't like, yeah, bone our team even harder, Roger.
James, are you saying that railroaded necessarily sounds like a bad thing? You're out of the objectivism club. Get
my
out.
My favorite quote from this article, though, is, quote, the reason, though, is a selfish one. Players, coaches, and executives have come to view the Patriots situation as a referendum on the commissioner's power. As in, the commissioner used his power unfairly and arbitrarily. Unquote. Yeah, dude, think about it. It's almost as though, like, it's in your self-interest to treat Alright.
I think the internet just cut you out there, James. You want to give that one again?
Wait, did it?
Yeah, Roger Goodell.
I didn't hear any of that.
You just went, all right. And I think Roger Goodell censored everything in the middle there, so give it to us one more time. It's almost as if it's in your self-interest to... kill Roger Goodell? Is that what you're telling us, to go to Maine and?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I don't know. I thought that like the joke I told at the end of that just fell really, really fucking flat.
No,
I was just like, God, guys, like that's.
No, give it to us one more time. Why? What is it in your self-interest to do?
Yeah, yeah, it's so they're talking, you know, all these NFL teams who want to remain anonymous, they're saying, like, we don't like the Patriots, you know, they're one of our adversaries in this contest, but we want them to be treated fairly so that we're treated fairly. It's almost as though, you know, treating others fairly is in your self-interest or something, huh?
You fucking selfish prick.
I know.
How dare you think such a thing?
It's funny
That's
how
ridiculous.
Nobody notices and, that until they get raped.
What? Get
boned.
I'm using raped instead of boned because James didn't like boned, so.
I see. Awkward. So, one of the other really interesting things here that has nothing to do with Deflategate whatsoever is, in a paragraph after what we just read, the author says, we should clarify several things before we go further. First, many of these team officials still despise the Patriots. Mostly, they admit because the Patriots win.
Mm-hmm.
Want to point that out there.
The truth
because they are your adversaries. So it's like, you know, you're pissed off that these people are beating you. I think that's fine. If you're against the Patriots, it's okay to hate the good in some ways. Not obviously not all the way, but it's like, God damn it, they're beating us. You know.
I know, I accept that as a perfectly legitimate reason, especially in sports, to despise another team as long as it's sort of revelrous kind of hatred,
right,
not a
moral thing. Not like,
yeah, you don't think they're immoral,
they
just, yeah, yeah, you're not, I mean, but I think a lot of people, you know, especially when it comes to this, it ends up bleeding into the moral dimension. They're winning and we don't like the fact that they're winning, therefore there's some kind of moral element to that. It's like, yeah, there's a moral element. It's a positive moral element. You should respect them morally for being a, you know, a respectable adversary. You know, it's,
and this is
I
why
think,
you should respect
this
them.
This is where we, yeah, exactly.
Ready? This is why you should respect them. Because Bill Belichick is a maniacal genius, so much so that nobody even notices. So I pointed this out to Daniel, and I still haven't seen this reported anywhere. What Belichick did in was it the second or third day of the draft? The third day?
After day one, it's just like one giant mass of humanity.
Okay.
I have no idea.
So sometime in the later rounds, what happened was the Patriots had a fuckload of picks. And they had too many picks that if they had picked all the players, they wouldn't have had enough room on their roster. They had to cut two guys as it was in order to sign the rookies they drafted. So, in the Deflategate, if you'll remember, not only is Tom Brady suspended 4 games, but the Patriots lost $1 million, a first-round pick this year, and a fourth-round pick next year in 2017. So what Bill Belichick did is, with all his extra picks in the sixth round, he traded a few of them to the Dolphins for a couple picks. Then he turned around and traded those picks to the Seahawks, and one of the picks he got back from the Seahawks is a 2017 fourth-round pick. No one will ever convince me for the rest of the life that Belichick didn't do that just to fucking piss off Goodell. He was sitting there, and you know when he got that pick, he's like, Goodell's so pissed right now. This is awesome.
Wait, so he his strategy on draft picks is completely formulated.
James, there is an awesome thing going on where when you criticize Roger Goodell, you cut out entirely.
It's the curse of Goodell. Again, I just thought that whatever I just said just fell flat completely. And you're all just like, oh fuck, James spoke again. God damn it.
No, what were you saying?
Any criticism of Adele just gets completely censored by, well, probably the NSA, but,
well, yeah, there,
we'll get to
the
that in the hopeful romantic.
We're going
to
talk about the Snowden trailer. But, James, what were you saying about Belichick's strategy is formulated around?
Oh, it's just funny that, but, so, it, Yeah, yeah. So what you're saying is that Belichick's strategy is formulated entirely about sticking it to Roger Goodell, is what you're saying.
I'm saying he always trades and gets more picks. So he always has, like, a bank of picks, right? He's like the dude who always mm-hmm. has a lot of money saved. So, like, when everyone else is struggling, he's like, well, why didn't you fucker save money and be smart?
He's like the guy in Settlers of Catan that you play with who hoards the wheat. And you always have to fucking deal with him to get the wheat. And you're like, how do you end up with all the wheat? And he's like, I planned, bitches. Now, pay for that fucking wheat.
Except this time he had so much wheat that rather than using it to win the game, he used it to fuck with one of the other players.
I'm going to build a road through your village. Haha, right. Fuck you.
Exactly.
The thing is Goodell kind of, you know, occurs to me as like a good and you see what I'm saying?
This is awesome.
Okay, nothing can top that, so we're moving on.
We didn't do it again.
Seriously, you said Goodell and then just silence.
Curse of Goodell, huh?
Moving on. Clemson.
Oh, God.
Oh, Justin and I met at Clemson University, and where we were getting master's degrees. Well, they were in the news this week because a Clemson professor has rebuked a group of protesters there, calling them, quote, shallow, narrow, and uninformed. A political science professor...
Before you give his response, okay. I read a little bit more about what happened today. So this entire controversy started because there was some flyer or poster up about like the African American heritage at Clemson University, and somebody hung four bananas off of it, and somebody else took a picture. I had the same response, James. I laughed as well. But the thing is, the school won't release who hung the bananas, and they won't release who took the picture. Because so far, there's only ever been one picture taken. So there's a conspiracy theory that maybe the bananas were hung by, actually, they were hung by a social justice warrior. But we'll get back to that in a second. That'll come back at the end. But I just
that would be incredibly consistent, by the way, with many of the reports of racism on campus over the years. There have been almost exclusively incidents where these sort of racist things happen, and then it turns out someone who is advocating against these positions, who is advocating for social justice, did it themselves. The poop swastika comes to mind.
So wasn't that at UCSD?
Yeah, it may have been, but
there was a noose hung, somewhere in a library.
Yes, that was.
So there
was
no context to the noose. It was just like a noose. Actually, it wasn't even hung. It was just like laying around somewhere.
Yeah. So we'll get more in depth into this in a second. But basically, that picture leaked on the internet or something, and then a bunch of people protested and got the university to say, like, we'll have more minority professors and things like that.
Yes, it was a 9-day sit-in outside of the main administrative building, Sykes Hall, which ended last Thursday when the university caved to most of the demands made by this student organization called See the Stripes, which was started, I believe, by a student from the PhD program that Justin and I are well familiar with, the Rhetoric Communications. Yes, who went to my undergrad, so... huge connection here.
This is going to swing back around to my undergrad too, so don't feel bad.
Yes, all the colleges are terrible.
He's getting a PhD in rhetoric.
Yeah,
rhetoric, communications, and information design.
God, this reflects so badly on Clemson. Did you see his "See the Stripes" video?
Yes, it's awful.
We have seen
so
many of
rhetoric.
His things that
I mean,
done.
Rhetoric. Oh my God, his rhetoric is just so. Just fucking terrible.
He can't even
produce the rhetoric required to describe it.
His rhetoric is essentially, I'm black and smarter than you.
Your flaw here, James, is that you believe that rhetoric has to do with any form of persuasion or communication, when in fact we've been taught at Clemson and other places that rhetoric is merely energy.
Wait, is that their definition of rhetoric? I must have missed that.
That's Kenneth Burke's definition of energy.
Is rhetoric, what type of energy does rhetoric take the form of? Is it work energy, heat energy, kinetic energy, or is it in, stored in the strong nuclear interaction of mass? Which one?
The fact that you believe that there is a reality that corresponds to anything means that you're just a patriarchal, cisgendered, heteronormative oppressor. That's what they would say to you.
That goes right along with me trying to, you know, do physics and stuff. So I guess, yep.
Yes. So the See the Stripes campaign is a student organization that's social justice oriented about Clemson's racist background, and we should all sort of deride the school, and we should change the name of all the buildings, and we should constantly flagellate ourselves. Is that the verb? With a cat of nine. And just repent constantly. So anyway, they had a bunch of demands that the university caved into. But a political science professor named J. David Woodard, who I never met when I was there, which I wish I had now, wrote an open letter in the Tiger, which is the campus newspaper, and said that this group, like I said, were shallow, narrow, and had uninformed demands, and they went against what he basically was proposing as like the beginning social justice warrior, Martin Luther King Jr. He says that this group runs completely opposite to his ideology. Quote, instead, the individuals involved want power over many things, including the curriculum, admission, buildings, hiring practices, and the atmosphere on campus. Mr. Woodward argued that contrary to the group's nonsense, King had a moral premise for his actions and emphasized forgiveness, not retribution. He goes on to say some pretty stunning things against them, but I think some of the most astute stuff has to do with the fact that these ideas would not be taken seriously in any scholarly context, at least according to this professor. And the fact that we are now so close to having these ideas forced on us, and especially the students of Clemson may have to take required courses in this nonsense, if that happens, he says, we should rename this place from university to, quote, indoctrination center.
Mm.
Yeah. So I think, way to go, professor. I mean, I can't even imagine having this nonsense go on when I was there. I would not be able to focus on schoolwork. I would have spent my entire time fighting this idiocy.
Is he still employed right now?
Yeah, I'm sure he's probably got tenure.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's why he did that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, what, I understand. Go ahead, James.
What I found especially enlightening or very encouraging about this, and what I found encouraging about this is that he notes that, number one, all of their demands are not based on reality. They're based completely on feelings. And if you actually read the grievances that the Tiger Stripe people are talking about, or whatever the hell their name is, every single one of their grievances starts with the sentence, "we feel," which is very revealing. First the "we," and then, of course, the "feel." And so, you know, he notes that. Secondly, he notes that this is not about any kind of truth. This is just about power. And what I've noticed from listening to people like Milo Yiannopoulos is that it would appear as though even the Republicans are starting to see the true nature of the left as being completely unconcerned with any kind of truth. It's not just that they're misinformed. It's that they're not even interested in the truth. They're interested in simply, they believe that any means justifies the ends of expanding the state. People are starting to catch on to this. Have you started to notice that yourselves, that even the right, as ignorant as they are, is starting to catch on to this thing about the left?
Well, James, you've already brought it to where I was going to bring it to, actually. You've been much more explicit about it, so I appreciate that. But this is exactly what
I didn't even use the fuck word.
Well, it's not as good if you don't use
the fuck word. I was explicit
without
using the fuck. Okay, I'm sorry. Just go on.
Yeah, that was a Justin joke right there. So,
yeah, it was.
yeah, this is exactly what I experienced undergrad. And, you know, all of this that's going on is literally, I've already seen this play out. So I actually searched the internet and I put in like three words and I sent something today that was a post from the president of my undergrad university when I was there in the spring of 2005. I put that in our thread today. And in it, she mentions the Erase the Hate rally. And this rally happened for two reasons. One, because somebody was writing up racial slurs all around campus. And I say all around. I never saw any of them. Supposedly it was in an elevator somewhere or something. Supposedly they wrote the N-word. And then also because the gay pride flag was stolen from the free speech flagpole or whatever it was called. This is at Ithaca College. I forget what the flagpole was called. But the reason, James, I say this is exactly what you're talking about, and this goes back to the beginning, is I was in the Ithaca College Republicans when I was an undergrad. Because I was dealing with all this shit, and I didn't know about the alternative of, hey, I could just be an objectivist instead. Because, fuck, nobody ever told me about Ayn Rand. I had to find Ayn Rand myself and read her myself. Read Atlas Shrugged and Fountainhead myself. So when we were there, we were accused several times of stealing the gay pride flag. But we never did. And we actually found out one time that one of the people stole it themselves and accused us of doing it.
God, at that rate, you might as well have just done it yourself. It could be like capture the flag. Just play a game of capture the flag against your political rival.
Yeah, make sure that L is in the word, though. You want to make sure you're capturing the flag.
See, that was a good one. Very important. We could take, we should take notes from him. That was a good one. And our response was just, why the fuck would we steal your flag? Like, we're sitting here trying to do, like, shit. Like, we don't give a shit about your flag. Like, you can have your flag. But yeah, we were seeing it back then, and all this stuff we saw, you know, all the kids who were, you know, all 10 of us out of 5,000 people who were in the Ithaca College Republicans, were seeing it back then, and we understood that. That's why it's sort of, to a certain extent, taking me a little bit longer to take all of this seriously, because I was, when I was in college, I was like, okay, when I get out of here, I'm done with this shit. I didn't realize it was going to infect the rest of the nation. I mean, we used to make fun of the Erase the Hate rally. I've probably made that joke before on this podcast. It was a hate rally. We're going to hate.
Oh, man, it's really getting out of control. But to James's point, yes, I mean, there have been a couple comments recently from folks I've worked with who are more conservative than I am, who have basically alluded to things like, you know, do you think all this is just a way of getting... They framed it as, do you think all this is just a cover for communism? Which I think isn't the most precise way to say it, but it is actually a quasi-astute way of thinking about it. The communists didn't, like, vanish. In the same way that, you know, when we won the Cold War with Russia, do you think all the communists just went home? We're like, oh, fuck, we lost.
Russia just ceased to exist.
They're anytime still you win a there.
World war, anytime you win a world war, the other country just disappears from the map.
Right. Like, God, they're still there. Only. They're still in government. They just have a different name. In the same way in the United States, the people who have always wanted government power, who are more open about it when communism and socialism were, you know, quote unquote, respected competing ideologies, they didn't go away. They didn't change their ideas. They're just going about it more surreptitiously. They're just going about it in ways that they feel like they can be successful. And right now they are fairly successful with this nonsense, but it is purely a cover for control. Government control. Power. That's what it is.
And they're very, very clever about it, is something that I've learned over the years. They're cleverer than even after, like, thinking about this for years, and even I can figure out. So here's a few examples of my college experience at USC. There was an incident, and I mean, this hardly qualifies as an incident, that there was an incident where someone took pictures of a couple having sex on the roof of one of the buildings at USC. And you know, and this was, it was early in the morning.
What's the problem?
You'll see. I mean, yeah, that just sounds like a great idea.
Were they fat?
But like, no, they look great actually.
I don't see a problem then.
Right. So, anyway, like, so, they thought they wouldn't be discovered. Someone took pictures of it. And it ended up as a news story. Okay. And what ended up happening is after this, there were suddenly a bunch of like anti-rape rallies. And for a number of months, I kind of just like made fun of it. Like I didn't understand there was a connection between these two stories. I just kind of joked around and I said like, hey guys, did you know like sometimes women get raped and like we should be against that? Like, and cause they had a rape awareness week. And then I'm like, dude, next week we should have bank robbery awareness week. Like, did you know that sometimes our money is stolen by bank robbers? You know, and then identity Theft Awareness Week. We should just have a week for every crime. So, and then, but it wasn't until months later that I connected these two. I'm like, oh crap. They had this anti-rape rally because of this public display of heterosexual sex. That, they want to sort of kind of, they can't openly state that all sex is rape, but they want to somehow make, because they mentioned this incident, but at no time did they mention why this incident had anything to do with rape. But they, what they're trying to do is sort of just kind of, you know, insert it in there, very they're trying to rape us with their idea, very surreptitiously, just kind of get it in there. Like, yeah, like maybe, you know, this sex, you know, it's a little risque, you know, cause they're doing it outside with the possibility of discovery. Maybe it was kind of rape, you know? Maybe she didn't want to be photographed or something. I'm not exactly sure where they were going with it, but it's like, it was clear they're trying to somehow imply that all sex is rape with this series of rallies that
they're in. Two things. One is now they would just say it's not rape, it's rapey. I don't know, it's a little rapey. And
right,
that's
exactly,
supposed to have the same moral condemnation as rape without having the person seem as if they are as lunatic as they should be by calling it rapey.
Isn't a rapey and the recipient of rape?
A rapey? Yes.
The rapist and the rapey.
And then two is, to your point, James, there is a small but growing, especially in the past couple of years, sect of feminism that actually does believe that all heterosexual sex is rape.
Well, I sent you guys that article too, didn't I? The blog entry.
An anti-penetration movement. All penetration is rape.
Yeah, I mean I think that is consistent with the feminist philosophy insofar as they think that any difference between the genders is inherently sexist. And so what's the most inherently like hetero thing that you, hetero here meaning different, like what else other than the act of penetration demonstrates that man and woman are different? And so to them that is like the literal metaphysical fact of sex is sexist.
Well, that was what that was in the article.
Vagina mechanics. Yeah, she's you better post that did you post that article to this show?
I will this week.
Do it.
Stay
it's absolutely hilarious.
My favorite thing is what James is referring to, the woman concretizes in the article, conceptualize it as, I believe, the hetero cage. Is that what she said?
I don't remember.
But if, whatever that term is, whatever the cage term is, if you search that on Twitter, since the article's been posted, there's just a stream of people laughing at the concept of what, I think it was hetero cave, or cage. Just go into Twitter and search that. And it's just a string of people laughing at how retarded the author is.
Oh, it's my favorite. It's like hashtag Trigglypuff. Oh, go look that up if you haven't yet. That'll make your day.
Trigglypuff, yeah.
When you're so speaking of making, doing two chants.
Indeed. Speaking of things that'll make your day?
Make you laugh.
No, probably not.
Okay, this is one of the funniest stories we've ever had on the podcast. This is one of my favorites ever.
Okay, I don't quite get that out of it.
Oh,
but okay. The headline for this is teen being sued after crashing car while allegedly using Snapchat's speed filter in Atlanta. A Snapchat filter. Okay, here we go. Let's start over again. Snapchat has a filter that lets people share how fast they're traveling while they take selfies. One, why?
I don't know.
You didn't know
Two,
that?
Two, I, no. When I've explained this to people. I do digital strategy for a living. I have to be on the cutting edge of all marketing and technology. The moment I open Snapchat, I instantly turn into a 79-year-old great-grandfather.
Yeah!
He's like, what the fuck does this do? Why are there, how do you do anything? Where's the is this a picture of me? Why am I on the screen?
At your wedding.
I have no idea.
At your wedding.
How to operate
Snapchat.
I have no, I've never sent a snap. I've used the chat feature in Snapchat. That's how old I am when I open Snapchat. It's like, oh, text. Ooh.
Not getting any dick pics.
When I heard the premise for Snapchat, they're like, oh yeah, and the picture only lasts for like 10 seconds at most. I'm like, oh, so it's an app for sending dick pics. Like, it's exclusively designed around dick pics or whatever. They're like, well, no, you use it to just send, you know, selfies to each other. But like, well, no, like, if you want to send a selfie, just send a fucking picture. And now they can have it as long as they want.
Yeah, it started as that, James, but it's become so much more.
I don't know at all how to use it. So, occasional co-host William, sent me a picture of Elliot. He was hanging out with Elliot in Disney, and I thought it was a really funny picture, and so I took a screenshot of it, and it was like, we've told William that you took a screenshot of this picture. Like, what? What? Yeah, I had no idea. It's like, one, how do you know, magic phone? A car accident victim is blaming Snapchat speed filter for a crash that left him with a traumatic brain injury. Is that the funny part, Justin?
Okay. No, that's the least funny part.
Okay. The plaintiff, Wentworth Maynard.
Yeah, get to how it happened. That's the funny part. Okay. And also how this article is written is funny.
It's got a funny name. Wentworth Maynard. Okay. Was merging onto a four-lane highway outside of Atlanta, Georgia, when his car was struck so violently it shot across the left lane into the left embankment. Crystal McGee was allegedly driving the car. Look, okay, we have Wentworth Maynard and Crystal McGee.
I miss the South so much.
Crystal McGee was allegedly driving the car that struck him, the lawsuit says, and she was on her phone trying to use the Snapchat speed filter at the time of the crash. Quote, McGee wanted to post an image of herself going fast. She argued that she was just trying to get the car to 100 miles per hour to post it on Snapchat.
That's what you're trying to accomplish? Like, that's what you're trying to accomplish. Oh man, if these numbers on the screen can show 100, like, are you fucking kidding me? Oh, but wait, there's more.
So a passenger in McGee's car said that she did in fact hit 113 miles per hour on the Snapchat filter, but when the cars collided, she was going nearly 107. 100! She hit a car going 107 miles per hour!
So that's the first thing. Nearly 107 is funny. And it's also funny because the phone has a camera that's front facing.
So
in the car.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
Why did it have to be a selfie?
Didn't have to.
It only counts if it's a selfie. Now, I'd also like to point out. I also want to point out that on this article, there is a picture of a snap that this same girl took when she's in the hospital, and it shows, like, blood trickling down her face. I shit you not. And it says, lucky to be alive on it.
That's
so, like, so she still won't stop snapping. Number one, she won't stop snapping.
Oh, my God.
Hilarious. That's such a major life event, like a car crash. To be recorded only in a snap that will last a single day. That's what I don't understand about Snapchat. It's this nightmare universe where there is no past and there is no future. It's just the now. The naked fucking now.
I fucking love it. It's like, there's other people in the car with you. You have to take a selfie. Then you nearly kill a dude and you're on the gurney and you have to take a selfie that says lucky to be alive.
And all your friends are only going to be seeing it for 24 hours. Literally, if you don't check Snapchat that day, you will not hear about this from this girl. Like, if she put it on Facebook, at least, like, we'd see the selfie tomorrow, you know? Because that, you know, tomorrow, it exists too. You might still be alive then.
That's how you know you're old.
We still, I just...
When you're like,
that's
oh,
how you know you're old.
If these
when,
kids
like, you're able to,
Facebook.
You know, project the future.
If they would just use Facebook, these fucking kids, they're cordless
if they would
phones.
Just, yeah, if they would, like, I don't know, it's just, it's, I can see this is why, I can kind of understand why people start to hate these things now, because it's literally an app centered around an epistemology that cannot project the future.
Well,
like,
okay.
Nah, the future isn't a real thing. There's not a thing called tomorrow when people might want to see this picture too. They can see it now. And well, if they don't, fuck them.
Yeah, what I think, James, what I think you're objecting to is the usage of it, not the design of the program. I mean, look, it's...
No, I am absolutely rejecting the design of the program. It's a terrible thing.
There are some things that are worth only recording for 24 hours or whatever. It's like when you call a friend and tell them. And then there are other things you take cool pictures of and you put on Instagram or Facebook. That's the difference.
I guess.
I don't see the difference.
Okay, let me put it
this way. I don't understand anything other than duty picks. Stuff like that, like, I get it. Like, if you want to send your, you know, like, I don't know. No, it's a terrible idea. Fuck Snapchat.
No, just take a picture and send it on Twitter. Jesus.
No, let me put it this way. I was in Downtown Disney on Friday, and there was a bunch of cosplayers there. And there was a dude dressed up as Louise. So I took
a picture. From Bob's Burgers.
From Bob's Burgers. And I just assume people who are listening to this podcast watch Bob's Burgers, but okay. So I took a picture of that, snapped it onto my story, and sent it to Daniel. That picture was never saved on my phone, and anyone who wanted to see it in 24 hours, or I wanted to make sure Daniel saw it, even if he didn't sign on in 24 hours, it went directly to him. So I've accomplished everything I wanted to without using any storage space on my phone and without having it forever recorded in low quality. On
storage is essentially
Instagram.
Free.
Storage is essentially free, and if you put it on Facebook, you'd remember that moment forever. Even though it's not a big deal, like, I mean, to go back to that
a
after a few years, you'd be like,
"Oh,
hey, it's Louis.
Dressed up like a preteen girl on my Facebook forever." Okay?
How about I text it to Daniel, and then Daniel goes, "Ha!" And then Daniel deletes the photo.
But then I have
like
to go
he does with
the
all the photos.
Of deleting it off of my phone.
Yeah, but you
oh
don't want to do that.
God.
I mean, I move every single picture I've ever taken on my phone. I move it to a hard drive so I can look back in those pictures, like, oh yeah, I remember when I did that, and the other thing. Like it, you know, because here's the deal, Justin. I like to remember that there was a past. I believe in the full span of time. I'm able to conceptually project. Man's conceptual faculty allows him to project both the past, the present, and the future. We live in a harmony between the three.
Okay, I have another argument for Justin. I have another argument for Justin.
No. I have an argument for James first.
No. Shut up.
I'm sorry.
Hey, it's my show. Nope. I get to go next. James, I have a rule for pictures that I'm going to save. Do you want to know my rule for if I'm going to save a picture or not?
Sure.
Can you masturbate to it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes! Oh, I love stepping on your masturbation jokes.
Will I jerk off to this picture at some point in the future? Yes? I will keep it. No? Nah, don't need it.
And you won't jerk off to the picture of the Bob's Burger carrier.
No, so I don't need it.
All right, fair enough.
My argument for you was, as someone who is interested in and an enthusiast of time travel, you should want to save everything from the past. You never know when it's going to come in handy.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't go with the pun on the word save, but all right.
I mean, let me just give you a perspective on this, is I'm actually holding in my hand right now a calculus assignment I did when I was 18 years old. I plan on looking at the problems from the book that I was actually doing this assignment from to see how shitty I was at calculus back then. I'm actually going to take the time to do that. I don't know, I really find it fascinating, like, oh, that's what I used to be, that's what my mind looked like back then.
And see, I thought that sentence was going to end with, and you see, what I'm holding in my hand right now is my dick. So,
as I'm jacking off to my saved calculus homework, as I saved this paper, I'm like, will I jack off to this in the future? Absolutely. And I put it in the jack off pile.
Oh my God.
Very good.
Only pile you need.
I think you should transition into the whole romantic now. No, I don't.
Speaking of having no foresight or ability to project the future, minimum wage hikes in California.
Okay, I think that speaks for itself, and I think Daniel's tired from the news here. So why don't we just give him a reprieve here, and we'll bullshit a little bit about entertainment and the hopeful romantic with JML. But yes, the minimum wage law is fucking retarded. starting off this week, as we alluded to earlier, let's take down the Snowden trailer. Snowden is the movie that's directed by Oliver Stone and starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt as not the Batman, as Edward Snowden. What did you guys think?
Although I suspect Snowden likes to think of himself as Batman. So.
Yes, that was the... Thanks for explaining that one.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So what did you guys think of this trailer? Because my favorite part of this trailer was how the internet is not a series of tubes. It's lights.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that scene. I remember thinking that was pretty stupid looking.
I liked when Nicolas Cage showed up to be like, man, you don't know what you're getting into.
Yeah, it's like, how could this trailer possibly get worse? Oh, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Ah, the NSA, it's in my eyes.
So.
Minus, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So there are a couple things about this. One is, could there be a legitimate story that is super interesting about what Edward Snowden did, went through, the consequences of it, etc., etc.? Abso-fucking-lutely. Is this movie going to be that story? No. No, it's not. No, it's not. This is going to, because I think it's going to be a really shallow look at the whole situation. Edward Snowden is a very interesting character, and while I don't want the movie to be naturalistic, I want the movie to not evade things like the consequences of Snowden's actions. I have a ton of sympathy for Snowden, and I think at the end of it, what he did was right. But there are many things that he did that were not right, and many consequences of his actions that we're still dealing with and we will continue to deal with for years to come that were a net negative for everyone. Oliver Stone, not really known for looking at an issue like this in a balanced manner, and not well known for his nuance is what I'm trying to say. So I don't think this is going to be a quality picture about Edward Snowden. I think it's going to be, well, it's going to be an Oliver Stone movie. And as I said to Justin, I think in the show prep, the last movie that Oliver Stone did that was good was, when was he born? Cause, hasn't happened yet. So. Sorry, Ollie.
It's disappointing because, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a good actor. I like that guy.
That guy. Yeah.
That guy in the
and he didn't do a particularly bad job in this trailer. I thought he was fairly convincing, although it's a little, maybe a little, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit of too much of a caricature as opposed to he's just acting out a part, but.
I don't know. I thought it looked pretty badass.
Well, all right. Well, convince us. Why? What do we need to know that would change our minds about
this?
Well, I mean, I think Snowden's story. I think he was a hero, and he deserves to be depicted as one. And they make an interesting, you know, this looks like it'll be an interesting movie of Cloak and Dagger about, you know, what Edward Snowden did. Although what you're saying is, you know, another perspective that I definitely respect. And I'll be on the lookout for when I watch that movie. I think I was kind of maybe looking at this a little too simply when I was judging the trailer, but I'm still pretty excited about it, except I'm a little afraid it may be anti-American.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you just forgot Oliver Stone was directing it when you watched the trailer.
I did not know Oliver Stone was directing it when I watched the trailer. Did it say he was directing it?
I don't remember, maybe at the very end, but easy to miss. Yeah, look, I'm highly sympathetic to Snowden, and I think knowing about the spying on America is a good thing. I think we should know about it. I'm glad he brought that part to light. Some of the other information that he released, probably not necessary and probably did damage overall to our intelligence gathering. But I don't know. I would like to see, and I'm trying to say this without sounding like a naturalist so that Justin doesn't kick me in the groin the next time he sees me. I just would like to see a movie that has a little more exploration of this and doesn't portray him entirely as a hero or entirely as a villain. Maybe that is natural. Maybe that is naturalistic. Maybe what I want is a documentary.
Okay, well, maybe you do want a documentary, but a protagonist who is neither a good guy or a bad guy is not inherently naturalistic if you define your theme upon which his supposed goodness or badness rests upon.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And in the case of Snowden, it isn't clear. It isn't 100% right. clear, especially when he went over, you know, when he went over to Putin for protection. That really raised my eyebrows.
Yeah, after he stole
like
the fucking
Mr. Spock.
Super Bowl ring from fucking Robert Kraft, fucking Putin.
What? That was really random.
That was the point. Right also this week, I had another battle with Daniel. In the battle, we emerged with a shared Netflix account. So now I can watch all this stuff on Netflix that you guys are all hyping up, such as The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And also, I finally got to watch the first episode of Daredevil Season 2. So I wanted all of us, because we've all seen it, just to give our impressions of it. And I have a feeling that it's going to be similar to what just happened with the Snowden trailer. So for me, when I watched the first episode of Daredevil, I literally do not care enough to watch the rest of the season. It was so boring to me. There was no thematic depth to it at all. And it actually, even in a way, reset a lot of things, which is the challenge on a show, is to not reset the characters, is to have them keep building. So you're watching the episode, and at the beginning of the episode, they have a conversation between Matt Murdock and his law partner, Foggy. And Foggy is, again, upset about the fact that Matt Murdock is Daredevil, and it says it makes him uncomfortable. And then the rest of the episode pretty much proceeds in the same boring manner. So I found myself so bored by this episode that I called Daniel and I was like, what do you think of this? Because I need, like, I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't totally fucking crazy.
And in the middle of him saying the words Daredevil Season 2, first episode, I had to take a nap because I was so bored from even just him saying the title. I had the exact same reaction. I actually very much like Season 1 of Daredevil, and I was quasi looking forward to this, although it got a little tiring by the end, but I was like, what the hell? I had to keep stopping it and going back and be like, what the fuck, what just happened? What are we talking about? It felt very disjointed to me, and I guess it's exactly what you said, was there was really no thematic depth to the first episode. It was a lot of random insertions and a lot of random introductions or reintroductions, and I don't know. I remember I felt this way about the trailer for Season 2. Remember, I was like, are we supposed to know who Elektra is? Like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Well, I think the way it's constructed.
Yeah, yeah. You noticed something important in the trailer. You picked up something important. So good job.
Thank you.
Good boy.
I rarely get a compliment from Justin. Wow. Jesus. Cherish the moment. So I don't know. I had no incentive to watch any more of it, and I haven't yet. People tell me that the Punisher is a badass character, and then I'll really like him, but I'm just not motivated enough in the main character at this point. I'd rather go rewatch Season 1, in fact, than watch the rest of Season 2.
It's like the new showrunners are just mimicking Stephen S. DeKnight's style, which in itself was just sort of like Joss Whedon light. So it's like now we're like 3 degrees removed from Joss Whedon at this point.
Can we be like more? Please?
Now, Whedon is a very talented writer. He's just a fucking douchebag leftist. James, what did you think of this episode?
So, I have a different perspective on this.
Good.
I mean, yeah, I've liked Season 2, but I don't think it has anything to do with, I forget what happened just in Episode 1. I've watched probably about 10 episodes of this season. So I can't remember, but all I can say is, number one, I really like it. Although I think it has nothing to do with Matt Murdock. I hate Matt Murdock. I hope he dies.
you realize he's the main character, so if he dies, there's no more show.
Yeah, but then we're gonna talk about the real show that's gonna happen during our next story. And that is, I love this season cause the Punisher is in. I just basically sleep through the parts Matt Murdock is talking about shit. And then The Punisher, John Bernthal, absolute. Like, I never thought of thinking of the Punisher is one of my favorite superheroes. At one point, he was my favorite. I never thought about doing the Punisher the way John Bernthal does, and it's great. It's fucking amazing.
Well, and
so as long as you're willing.
And to be fair, in the first season, Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk almost stole the show from Matt Murdock as it was.
Oh, he absolutely did. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was basically the hero of that show. And like, yeah, I was rooting against Matt Murdock, and then I think at the end of the first season, they're like, oh shit, we basically made Wilson Fisk the good guy. Ah, make him say something crazy so that, you know, the audience wants him to be put in jail. That's basically what they do. And then he goes full crazy in this season. I want to point out something else is that from seeing this Daredevil, since seeing the majority of the Daredevil show and comparing it to other Marvel cinematic other Marvel products, other Marvel films, It's so much better. This is, whether you like it or not, I think you would agree with me. This is so much better than all of their movies. This makes me realize how shallow I've always liked the Marvel movies a little bit, but.
I would say the only.
Even Daredevil, which is not a great show. It's good. It's a good show. When I compare the depth of this show, even though there's not much depth, to all the Marvel movies, I realize how just bankrupt the Marvel movies actually are. Like, there really is very little depth to them. I just kind of realized. And I'm sure Jessica Jones, even though I know I didn't see it, and I know you didn't like it, but from what I've heard of Jessica Jones, it also sounds so much deeper than all of their movies.
Yeah, I mean,
careful with the deep and the rape metaphor, but
right.
Yeah, okay.
The only movies I would disagree with you on are Iron Man's 1 through 3. I think those had some depth to them, and I think those were good. But beyond that, I would agree with everything you said about the Marvel movies. And the only problem with the Marvel TV universe, the Marvel Netflix universe, I don't know if that's a term or if I just made it up, but the only problem with it is not the production value of it. I mean, maybe Daredevil season 2 gets better. I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it one day. I'd rather watch other shit first. But the only problem with it is it's social justice-y. That's the problem, is the themes are social justice-y. It's romanticism. I mean, even Jessica Jones is undeniably, there's elements of, strong elements of romanticism in it. But the problem is it's social justice-y.
I know, but at least it has a fucking point. It's not Thor screaming in a cave.
Oh God!
I'm actually. I remember you guys took down. I remember you guys took down the Independence Day trailer last week, and I just remember thinking, like, God, at least Independence Day had a fucking plot that was consistent. The aliens want Earth. We stop them using a trick. It's a fucking plot.
Hey, we weren't critiquing the first movie. I very much enjoyed the first movie. It's one of Will Smith's.
Oh, the
best
first
movies.
Movie is. Undeniably a classic. Let's just be very clear about that.
Yeah.
We're just objecting to the idea that it's like, hey, let's just do this again. And it's just like, they really like targeting the monuments. I mean, in a way, Daredevil season 2 is like the same thing as that trailer. Like, that's the vibe I got from the first episode of Daredevil season 2.
We're just gonna do this all again, basically.
Yeah, and it's just gonna mimic what came before rather than try and be something new. Like I said, that's the greatest challenge of being a TV writer, and to a certain extent why I find being a TV writer more appealing than being a movie writer, because being a TV writer, you have the potential to really go into depth with these characters and these themes and these stories and setups, and it challenges you in a way to continue to be new and not just repeat shit like the Big Bang Theory does.
Well, don't get me started about the Big Bang Theory.
Well,
but
let's get you started instead about what you already alluded to. Apparently they're doing a spin-off of this season. And James, you're telling us it's worthwhile that they're doing a Punisher spin-off? This isn't just more Marvel, make more Marvel money?
Oh, no. I mean, it could be that the only reason I like season 2 of Daredevil is because I slept through the Matt Murdock parts and just watched, you know, season 1 of The Punisher. I think season 2 of The Punisher show will be amazing. I love what there's this fucking epic moment where John Bernthal describes, like what it's like to return from war. And I don't know if it's at all psychologically accurate, but it just really, it just really made me feel. It was so good. And like, he just brings a, he brings a depth to the character. He yeah, brings a lot very, of specifics.
He's a very good actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe I will be interested in The Punisher. I've just,
can you?
Like you, it's just, Matt Murdock is so whiny. I just don't.
Yeah. I mean, you know what's interesting though is in the second season of Daredevil, his whiny Catholicism bitchness actually becomes part of the plot, and it's interesting actually. There is character development. It's just that it's character development about a character I want to die.
He's like, you know who he is? You know who he is, Daniel? He's like the final form. He's the evolved form of Jack from Lost.
Oh, in the Pokemon theory of life?
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. James, are you familiar, just quickly, with Pokemon Theory of Life?
Absolutely not. That sounds hilarious, though. What is it?
It's just that human beings have the same characteristics as Pokemon. Like, you'll look at that person and be like, yeah, that's just the second or third evolved stage of so-and-so. And so in this case, he's saying that Jack from Lost is the de-evolved stage, or you could say Matt Murdock is the second evolved stage of Jack from Lost.
Right. Okay, yeah. You could definitely explain a lot of things on this Nietzschean hypothesis.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so James, what you're going to do is we'll give you 2 weeks, and the next episode you come back, you can give us and the viewers a rundown of what episodes and what time codes to watch Daredevil Season 2.
I will, yeah, I'll...
Just whenever the Punisher shows them. Up.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on here, and I have a question. This next story I'm going to throw to you, Daniel, because I want to know how important this story is, or if it's not important at all. Apparently, DreamWorks Animation was acquired by NBC Universal. Now, is this a big deal because they're like number two behind Pixar? Is this going to kill them, or is this just like when Pixar was bought by Disney?
I think it opens up a lot of interesting opportunities. I forget the exact properties that NBC Universal owns, but the NBC Universal actually owns a ton of animation properties already, like classic cartoons.
Well, the big one they own, and they have a shitty ride in their theme park now, is they own Minions. That's where they've been making all their money off of.
Yeah. So it's sort of already a connection, and I only think that this gives DreamWorks more capital to do what they want to do. So in many ways, it's like when Disney bought Pixar, but I mean, I don't think NBC Universal is going to have the same kind of creative control that Disney does with Pixar, or maybe the other way around. But I think it's probably a net benefit for everyone here. DreamWorks gets more money to do what DreamWorks does, and I think DreamWorks has gotten much better in the past few years. So, that's not a very exciting answer, but I think that's the real answer.
Well, no, and that's important to have the real answer, and you're the animation expert here in the Midside, so I really wanted to put this in because I think this is kind of a big deal. This is the number two behind Pixar, right? They came up with such epic properties as Shrek, right? DreamWorks has the huge Shrek franchise, right?
Yeah.
What else has DreamWorks done? Kung Fu Panda?
Yes, that's the one that's making them all the bank recently.
Right.
People can't get enough of Kung Fu Panda. I mean, even the third ridiculous movie in the series was still really fucking funny and well done.
Right.
Yeah, I'm excited that they're going to have more money to do shit.
Right, and maybe if this will beef up the Universal theme parks a little bit more. You know, they just did the Harry Potter world. They did all that, Potter World or whatever they call it. Now maybe they'll add some more animation stuff in there. So I don't know. I think this is a win, and I think it's important news, and that's why I wanted to talk about it. James, do you have any opinions, anything you want to say about DreamWorks, Shrek, Kung Fu Panda, Universal?
I didn't like Shrek, personally. I just always found it overrated.
What?
Yeah. It just seemed like a bunch of pop culture references that I just either didn't get or just seemed to be really trite.
So you understand why I liked the movie then?
I mean, look, DreamWorks has done some awesome things that I think they could get more out of. So, How to Train Your Dragon, awesome. One of our favorite animated movies of all time, Rise of the Guardians.
Yeah, that movie is fucking underrated. We should do a special episode about that one. Just analyzing the fuck out of that movie. That's a great movie.
We should all nominate, we think, like, really underrated films in whatever genre and do a series on that. And then, of course, one that I absolutely unequivocally have to mention every single time I think we talk about animation, which is The Penguins of Madagascar. Now, like, the Madagascar franchise in general, I think, is really trite and fairly terrible, but the penguins, the characters of the penguins are outstanding. And the Penguins of Madagascar movie is brilliantly written as a comedy, and it works for adults, it works for kids, and it's just a stunning plot that is pro-individualism, it's pro-freedom, it's all these things without being preachy or shallow. It's an incredible film. So.
There you go. So let's, now that we've got past all this useless stuff, let's talk about what we really want to talk about. Batman versus Superman.
Yeah!
I think we have a record. I want to know how many weeks we're going to have stories about this. Because, you know, next week, too, we're going to compare Civil War to Batman versus Superman. So, get used to it, audience. But there are three stories I want to talk about this week. The first is...
Oh, my God.
I want to declare a new enemy. So, we destroyed Grantland, Midsiders.
That's right.
A collective effort to destroy Grantland. This is our new target. We have to destroy Birth Movies Death. If you remember, I wrote an article, put it on themidside.com, about critiquing The Critic, about how there was a critic who wrote about how all the purpose of all film criticism is just to share your experience with the film. Well, not surprisingly, this same critic hates Zack Snyder. And he's the same guy who a few weeks ago started the rumor that Suicide Squad was doing reshoots to become funnier and more lighthearted, which the director actually tweeted back and said, no, we're doing more reshoots to have action. There's nothing true about this rumor. Yet he still reported another rumor. And this is what I'm going to read from the rumor he's reporting. And I want you to listen to the language he's using and the sources he's backing things up with. He says, sources at WB tell me that this is just one part of what's going on behind the scenes at DC Movieverse. He's referring to the fact that the director of The Flash left over creative differences. Continuing, Zack Snyder and Jeff Johns were taken aback at critical and audience reaction to Batman vs. Superman, I'm told, and WB execs have found themselves at odds with Snyder over his vision for Justice League and the DC Movieverse going forward. Of course, Justice League was scheduled to start shooting mere days after Batman vs. Superman was released, which meant WB couldn't take any definitive action, like removing Snyder or delaying the movie to make changes, without poisoning the box office for BVS. The result? Lots of fights between Snyder and the WB execs, and lots of pressure from Burbank on Snyder, who is shooting in London. He then goes on to say James Wan, the guy who got famous off of Saw, the Saw franchise, and also does The Conjuring, and he's releasing The Conjuring 2, who's supposed to direct Aquaman, is supposedly... Oh, he also made a fucking over $1 billion with Fast and Furious 7. Supposedly, he's feeling trepidation about the Aquaman project and wonders if he really needs it. Because he doesn't need the WB, they need him. Because he already has all his awesome success.
Yeah, he doesn't need it, or the, you know, millions of dollars he'll make as the director. My favorite thing. Of course he needs it, because he needs money, because that's how Hollywood directors work, and that's how you measure how successful you are in Hollywood, is how much money you make. So
is there anything else that stuck out to you that we can prove this article wrong, and we can prove that it's evil just based upon how it's written?
All right, calm down there, Sparky. I'm not sure we can prove that it's wrong per se, but as someone who was going to be a journalist and who studied journalism, you have to be incredibly suspicious of things that are just named as like a source in the WB, especially when you can't even name, when you get an anonymous source, and journalists use anonymous source all the time, but they're usually, it's like a cabinet official or someone working directly in the West Wing or someone working in the Department of Education.
We saw it on the first story where it was
a high-ranking official in the Department of Education.
Right, or one NFL executive who didn't want to be named. Remember we saw that in the first story?
Right, and even an NFC executive, one of the team owners or executives in an NFC team. You can have specifics without being specific about the source. when you just name a source in the WB, the janitor who may have overheard something, an intern who makes nothing and who completely misunderstood what he heard or she heard because it's out of context, you automatically have to be incredibly skeptical about that kind of reporting. And then the rest is drawing out emotional characteristics in the reporting of the thing. I forget the exact words he used, but he keeps drawing it out like he was in the room witnessing the emotions on the people's faces when they were talking. You have to be really skeptical of that kind of reporting. That's you're leading, you're trying to insert yourself into the story and your interpretation of it, and that's just, it's shitty journalism at worst, or at best, and at worst, it's outright lying.
My favorite part of what you're talking about, Daniel, is when he says that, he basically flat out says, or, you know, he implies as strongly as possible, that the only reason WB didn't take quote-unquote definitive action, such as firing Snyder, is because they went right ahead with the production of Justice League, because it was scheduled so quickly. As if they thought keeping Snyder would make them lose lots of money, they wouldn't have delayed production for 2 months.
Yeah, this is a, please note the time, an Adam Carolla-ism, right? He's been on this rant lately about, because people saying like, oh, that company doesn't have a heart or something. He's like, companies don't have hearts. Companies are just giant money-making machines. It doesn't matter if the thing that makes the money is a movie, a computer, or condoms. They are money-making machines. And if it was something where Zack Snyder was so detrimental to them making money, it wouldn't matter what the public perception would be unless they thought the public perception would make them less money. They would fire Zack Snyder. But clearly they think he has the best chance of making them oodles and oodles of money. And by the way, do we know what the worldwide total is now for Batman vs. Superman?
It's enormous. $863 million right now.
$863 million. Dollars. Yeah. That's oodles of money.
Mm.
Oodles.
And with the half an hour longer Ultimate Edition, it's going to make even more money on the Blu-ray, probably more than a typical movie, because it's like you're getting a whole other movie. And the reason I say you're getting a whole other movie is story number two here. So there's a story from Screen Rant where apparently Jesse Eisenberg gave an interview, and he said the following quote in it. "It's a very complicated mythology that I was able to wrap my head around while we were filming, but I think there were certain editorial choices that I was not aware of that they put in retroactively." Jesse Eisenberg, of course, plays Lex Luthor, and the third time I saw the movie, I was extremely aware of the fact that they cut many of the minor character scenes, and they cut Lex Luthor's scenes. And in fact, if you follow me on Snapchat, you would have seen me talk about this on Snapchat immediately after it ended, because I wanted a place to share my immediate reaction but not have it saved forever.
But only if you saw it within the 24 hours of Justin doing it.
I would have seen that, Justin, but that happened in the past, so I don't remember what you said.
He's fucking boofing you with existentialism. I like it.
So
it's an existential boof.
This quote does not surprise me, and it also gives me a lot of even more excitement for the Ultimate Edition, because, you know, I know, Danny, you only saw it once, but, like, if you think back to the scene, like, the speech Lex is giving at his, for the library, remember the library where they're giving the library charity dinner or whatever the fuck that was?
Yeah, it's a very awkward speech, yeah.
Yeah, but if you watch it again, it really seems like they cut a lot of it out, because it seemed like it really was going to be philosophically deep, and then all of a sudden you're at the end with him stuttering, and it seemed like they cut out the entire middle of it. And a lot of the scenes with him and with the senator, it's like they cut around just to get the big epic line, like, "Do you want to know the biggest lie in American history, Senator? It's that violence can be, or no, it's that power can be innocent." It's like they were just cutting around those lines, and all the depth that built to that was cut out. So I think that's a lot of what's going to be cut back in, and I'm excited to see that. And I think this quote is evidence of that.
All right.
Final Batman versus Superman story is, this is also from Screen Rant, and somebody is finally starting to get what the movie's about. But it's interesting how they're still trying to fit it into their sort of altruistic box. Now, I'm going to read a quote from this long article that Screen Rant wrote about how Zack Snyder made the best Superman story possible. And then I also want to point out why it's correct and what's wrong with it. So here's the quote. It's here.
That's complex.
Yes. Complexity here in the midside. It's here where he finally realizes what Jonathan meant, Jonathan being his father, acknowledging that Lois has become what his mother had been to his father. For him, like Jonathan, the new sense of purpose is immediately clear, with even the film's musical score quieting to drive the point home. It really shouldn't be understated. This is one of, if not the most human moment imaginable for the character, with Clark mortal, injured, and not actually thinking of being a hero or of grasping his duties to mankind. He's just a man who has found a woman to love, like his father before him, who had become his world. Now, this quote is stunning to me. This analysis is stunning because they get it. They get how Snyder is making Superman human, which was part of the point of the movie. He's just a human like us, fighting for his values. And the fact that he also got the whole point of the whole theme of, you know, you're my world, which he says to Lois before he flies off to fight Doomsday. What I don't like, though, is the fact that he's still trying to fit it in this box about Superman having duties to mankind. Because you need to take it one step forward. The reason Superman continues to fight is because he values Lois and values the world, not because of a duty, because he's finally found what he's fighting for. And he realizes the externalities, like when Jonathan said he saved his farm, but it destroyed the Lang farm by accident. The externalities are not his fault. He's not morally culpable for them, because you can't be morally culpable for what you don't anticipate as long as you are trying to anticipate everything possible. If you can't anticipate a negative consequence and it happens, you're not responsible for it. So he realizes, I'm going to keep fighting because I have something to fight for, and that is the purpose in fighting. Not sacrificing yourself, not a duty to the world.
I feel like I do have an obligation here as someone who works for a legal organization to say that you are, in fact, legally culpable for things you couldn't anticipate.
Yeah, but I'm
just
said moral.
I mean, not morally. I'm just going to have to say that.
I didn't say legally, did I?
I know. I just want people to be clear that they don't just go out and start, you know, burning down fields and stuff.
But that's
like, I can't anticipate the consequences.
But that's part of what happened in the movie. When they bring him in front of the Senate or whatever the fuck that was, they were trying to essentially say, we're the government, and because we say it, you're morally culpable.
Yes. Agreed. No, I'm with you. I'm just, you know, don't burn shit down.
So I like it. The point is, I love that people are getting it, and it's out there, and people are understanding it, and other people are seeing what's in there as well.
It's very good. I did not do show prep for this particular part of the show, and I was quite sort of shocked to hear that quote, so...
James, any comments before we move on to Reddit on Reddit?
I mean that covers everything I was gonna say and much, much more. So yeah, let's move on.
I love
Reddit.
The fact that I can say things that shut you two up makes me so happy.
Takes a lot.
Don't worry though, they'll have lots to say because we're gonna ask some ridiculous questions today. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way, EA, glow, Steam, rocks, got rest for my firewall. See, these things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First Reddit, and we're going to give Marvel some love here because we've bagged on Marvel a lot, but actually it's a Fox-owned Marvel property, so...
Yeah, so it doesn't even count. Deadpool's the only everything I said about Marvel movies earlier, like, it doesn't apply to Deadpool. Deadpool, like, had a plot, it had characters, they made choices.
What?
That's about all that there were jokes. That's all that can really be said for Deadpool, but it's more than could be said for most of the Marvel movies. Sorry. Go ahead.
Given that Deadpool is aware he is in a comic/movie, the best commentary track for the Blu-ray would be Deadpool watching his own movie. To which I ask, agree or disagree?
Okay. Clearly agree. But, nerdy point here. Is Deadpool aware that he's in a movie, or is he insane?
In the movie, he's aware that he's in a movie. In the comics, I believe he's supposed to be insane, and the reader of the comics, as the reader, you are his imaginary friend, or whoever the hell insane people are talking to.
But it's never established in the movie that he's aware he's in a movie. He just talks to the camera. He's never like, I'm in a movie.
No, it is established that he's in a movie because he says, he says it's almost as though the studio couldn't afford more X-Men. So, like, he's aware he's in a movie.
You know? Or he's crazy.
Yeah, but doesn't he makes jokes about comic writers and stuff, too, in the comics. I don't know. I just don't know if it's clearly established. I would have to watch the movie again. I've only seen it once. Now you've given me a reason to rewatch Deadpool, Daniel. Thank you.
Just saying, just having one of these nerdy arguments, like, yeah. who's more powerful, the Hulk or Superman, you know?
I would love this because normally I just hate the shit out of commentary tracks. Does anyone actually watch them? It's just like, oh yeah, here's where, we fucking made a movie and, you're not gonna watch the, you're not gonna experience the making of The Matrix. Well, we pointed a camera at this woman and recorded her. Here she's kicking a policeman in the face. That's how we did it. Like, no, I don't care. I want to watch the fucking movie.
Thank you, James, because I was actually going to make that point as well. Is even I can't watch commentary tracks because they're so dumbed down. Like, I tried to watch, I think, the commentary track for Dawn of the Dead, and I didn't even get all the way through. I was like, for every Snyder series episode, I'm going to watch the commentary track. But I couldn't even get through it because they don't give any sort of in-depth insights. It's sort of for the layman. But with this one, I think they're actually doing one with Ryan Reynolds and the two writers. And I think that might actually be worth watching just because it would be fucking funny. Can you imagine Ryan Reynolds making fun of the Deadpool movie?
Yeah, that'd be great. I think that's exactly what the Deadpool movie needs.
Yeah. So we'll check that out when it comes out, and as well as I'll watch the movie again to decide if he's insane or aware of when he's in a movie. So let's move on to the next Reddit. What fee is without a doubt a 100% money grab / extortion that companies are charging?
I actually thought a lot about this one, and every single example I kept coming to was actually not a company, but a government thing. Is that okay?
Government is the ultimate company.
The ultimate extortion.
So, of course, we would be remiss if we didn't take part in the internet sensation that currently is the tax meme and say that the ultimate penalty that is stupid that is extorted is income tax in its entirety.
Yeah, you saw the taxation is theft meme I made, right?
Did I?
Yeah,
remember.
It was 300, and it was the black guy going, this is madness, and then Leonidas says, madness? And then he turns around and he says, taxation is theft.
Oh, yeah.
It was a good one. I'm patting myself on the back, but I can't reach my back because my shoulder's too big now.
Oh, yeah. Swole. Yeah.
Pretty soon you won't even be able to wipe your own ass.
But, no, it's things like, you get a ridiculous parking penalty for whatever nonsense, and you go online, and it's like, you can mail us a check or money order, or you can pay online, and there's a 5% convenience fee plus $4.95. What day and age? Or what credit card system are you using that there's a 5% and a flat fee?
Yeah, that's similar to what I was going to say. That's like insurance online payments or like, I guess utilities or government. So, yeah,
basically,
that's exactly what I was going to
say,
where they're like, there's a $2 fee to pay for this utility bill. So it's like every utility bill I get is actually $2 more. You have to factor that in.
Yeah, I mean, every private company that does – I hear people complaining about private companies doing this all the time. And all I know is I do not patronize any private company that does shit like this to me. Like, I don't have a bank that charges me fees all of a sudden. I don't have, a telephone company that, charges me fees for no reason, like sometimes, and you gotta look at the bill and then give them an angry call. Like, no, that doesn't happen to me. Like, this is strict, like, companies don't do this because they know it pisses the people off. It's all government.
How do you buy concert tickets then? Because every time I fucking buy a concert ticket, there's like an $8 convenience fee.
I don't know. When something like that happens, I just take the attitude of like, oh, I guess the ticket is just that much more.
Right.
Yeah, but if there's a choice in patronage, I'm absolutely with James. If I come across something and it's like, we're going to charge you a fee to do this thing that this other company is not going to charge you a fee to, it's like, well, fuck you. You just lost all of my money.
I mean, that's the whole reason to have a girlfriend, right? That's why you get married?
To pay the fees for you?
Pay the fees?
What? No, so you don't have to pay the fees of a prostitute.
This is a condom fee. This is a fellatio fee. Yes.
I mean, it's expensive to have a girlfriend, but it's cheaper than having a hooker every night, isn't it? I mean, if you do the math, right?
You're insatiable.
Well, no, my point is, do the math, right? If over the history of a lifetime...
Okay, Justin, no one is arguing with you. You're still
he just wants you to think about
point.
It, Daniel.
Do you want me to do a cost-benefit analysis before my wedding?
Yes.
Or what?
Yes, I want you to... When we go to the bachelor party, when I
you gotta
play
it on that
Thursday...
You've got to factor in the cost of the wedding, too.
You need to give me a presentation of the cost-benefit analysis of why it's cheaper to have a wife than a hooker. Because if it was cheaper to have hookers, no man would get married.
Yeah.
I feel like this is like a business thing for you. You could be like the Uber of whores.
The Hoover?
You could the Horber? The Hoover? Yeah. Yeah. I guess Lyft is probably more appropriate, but
lift your skirt. I'm just getting us ready for the last Reddit, which, thank you, Daniel actually found a Reddit. So if you guys have a problem with this one, tell him. But you won't, because this is actually one of the best Reddits ever. What is a really inappropriate question that you have always wanted to ask?
There's many ways to answer this. Some of the ways that it's answered in the actual Reddit itself aren't so much like inappropriate questions as questions that people would be very uncomfortable answering, even though they're not quote unquote inappropriate. So like asking a doctor if they've actually ever used medication to kill someone, like later in life, who's asked them to, or what was the first one? It was like asking old people if when they have sex, they are fantasizing about younger people, like, or how your partner looked when they were younger or something like that. So, I have an incredibly easy and shallow one, but one that I don't know what this says about my character. Maybe you guys will hate me after I say this, but I want to ask every single goddamn person I work with how much they make. I don't know why it's an inappropriate question in modern culture, but it's something we're not allowed to talk about, and it's something that's wildly inappropriate to bring up.
Yeah,
I'm
where
curious.
Does that come from? Is that like a privacy issue? Like you're worried about getting robbed or something? Or is that just something you're not supposed to talk about? Like I never heard why you're not supposed to talk about that one.
I think it's because the man doesn't want you collective bargaining.
That's crazy.
It's the man keeping
reason.
You down.
It's an HR thing because they don't want controversy and they don't want discontent. That's why. It's a complete HR thing. That's why you're not allowed to talk about it.
I mean, so there's a little bit of a cheat in the nonprofit world, which is that nonprofits have to release the amount of money that their executives make, or it's like the top 10 highest paid people or something. So you can sort of see at the top what people are making and be like, holy shit, that's nowhere near what I'm making. But I would just ask every single human being on the planet what they make. Like, I'm curious about those things, but it's apparently wildly inappropriate. So
I don't know if this is an inappropriate question to ask. I mean, actually, at the time, it was very appropriate. I was talking to a fellow USC student. I shit you not, a fellow USC student. And this question was just floating in my head. And I never asked it because I was just being a coward. And the question is, are you retarded or just kind of dumb? Are you just really, really dumb?
That's
like,
my
at what
question.
Point where do you draw the line?
You stole like, did my you... answer. You stole
really?
My answer. Yes, I always want to ask people, are you fucking retarded? That's what I want to ask them. I was like, did you just
no?
Not think
but
that
I'm being
through?
Serious. Not are you fucking retarded? It's like I just literally want to clinically know, like. Did you hit your head earlier, or are you just dumb? Are you just ignorant of certain things?
I really want to ask people that. Like, when I ask them, are they fucking retarded? Like, I'm not saying that to be funny. I really want to know if they're retarded or not.
Maybe you can ask it in a more coded way. Like, are you on the spectrum? That's a new one.
That's not necessarily retarded. There's plenty of Asperger people who are really smart.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you just put it in scare quotes then? Are you on the spectrum? Because I don't know. I always thought you could start making fun of people just by calling them specs. But shut up, you fucking spec.
Yeah.
Any other ones? Any other really inappropriate questions you've always wanted to ask?
I mean, I don't know. Not really. I'm fairly open with people. I tend to ask questions. I used to play this game when I was younger, like I've talked about I'm old now, but like in my early 20s or mid 20s, as great conversation started with people and actually getting them used to talking freely is just play, truth or dare with people. And it actually opens them up and you can have really insightful conversations. Like things that I thought conversation should have been anyway.
But when you
make it into a game, people are much more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
So.
What about like asking a religious person, like, what happened to you? Like, what's your damage? Like, what was your psychological, like, trauma that forced you to believe in this? Why do you need to seek comfort in this?
There's a difference between asking an awkward question than asking an insulting question.
I mean, I just ask the question, why do you think that? Just on anything people say, and I feel like a lot, you know, sometimes people are just kind of uncomfortable with it. Just, why do you think that? I'm not even about to jump down their throat and tell them why they're wrong. I just want to know why they hold that opinion, and they just kind of squirm when they're asked to account for their opinion using my heteronormative logic.
Isn't the real answer to this question, though, anything Dr. House asks over the entire series? Isn't what that show is an exercise in? Like, they put him in situations that are, like, culturally or philosophically important, and then he asks the questions that people don't have the balls to ask.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's actually incredibly – I guess that's probably one of the main reasons I like the show, because it's actually fairly cathartic to me to see someone asking, quote-unquote, inappropriate questions and people – I mean, it's funny that throughout the first four seasons, there's this sort of shock at it. But then, like, as it goes on, they realize they couldn't do that every time he asked the question, so that his fellows just start answering the questions outright instead of fighting him on it, which I was like, now we're in utopia.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
So, look, that's a good place to put a bow on this episode. Utopia. It's always a great place to end. So, what did we learn this trip, Daniel?
We literally ended nowhere.
I learned that apparently Roger Goodell has the power to censor the internet. Especially when being criticized by James. Every single fucking mention of Goodell was X'd out. I love it. Awesome.
James?
Yeah, I mean, Goodell, anyway, what I learned was that...
Okay, now he's fucking doing it on purpose. You son of a bitch.
But then they did.
Goodell did it again, James. You can start.
I totally did that one on purpose.
I know you did that one on purpose. That was good, though. It was funny. I liked it. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that apparently John Berthenell is that good as the Punisher, so I might actually have to slog through Daredevil Season 2. Only 12 more episodes to go.
Take little micro naps for the Daredevil part.
Did you get any sleep last
Matt Murdock.
Night? Yeah, during the Matt Murdock parts.
So a full 8 hours then? Yeah, sorry. If you learned anything this week, we want you to tell us, because we're so interested in what we impart upon you. Especially if you have an awkward question that you've been dying to ask us.
Sure, yeah.
Please.
Share your inappropriate questions that you've wanted to ask us or other people, and we will answer them on air.
Whether they're about us or anyone else, we will answer them, in fact. So you can tweet those at The Midside, or you can leave them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheMidside.
What is your poop smell also, like? How big is your penis? Questions like that.
Or not those, but whatever questions.
We will answer any.
We will answer any questions. That's right. Full disclosure here at The Midside. And as Justin said, tell a friend. Tell a friend. Tell a coworker. Shout out to Christopher, who apparently binge listened to a bunch of Midside episodes. He's a coworker of mine, and said that he totally agreed with every single thing we said, and I wanted to stop him right there. But he continued about Batman versus Superman, which was plenty fine with me because
this episode's
we love Batman
for
versus Superman.
It's for you, Chris. And make sure you tune in next week when we point out why Batman versus Superman is superior to Civil War.
Okay, we don't know that beforehand.
I know that
with an open mind.
I know that a priori.
It's one of the synthetic truths.
It's a categorical imperative?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A-Z.
Okay, so... No! That's not what Kant would have said. Shut up. So, yeah, tell a friend. It works. We're growing. Liberty.me, folks, thanks for tuning in. So many of you, we love you. Even though you're crazy libertarians, we are too a little bit, but not as crazy as you, but we still love you. And, of course, Patreon. Man, oh, man. I still literally cannot
Patreon.
Believe that there are human beings willing to give us actual money to do this show. Blows my mind every single time I think about it. And you too can be one of those human beings by going to patreon.com/themidside, and you can choose to give us $1 a show, 50 cents a show, $6,000 a show, whatever you're willing to, if you're especially one of the executives where I work and you make the money you do, $6,000 or $7,000 a show, nothing for you.
And we will never charge an inappropriate fee.
That's right. No inappropriate fees for us. All appropriate fees. Very appropriate fees. The Justin needs a hooker fee.
That's right.
For instance.
Yes.
Right at the top there. So thanks for joining us on this trip, and tell a friend. Rate us on iTunes, 5 stars.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this trip. This concludes your journey into The Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Day!
Tony Stupid, Xbox Game, B-J-J-J, all the way, B-J-J-J,
what the hell was that?
Just put that in instead of the song.
Oh yeah, we have songs. I forgot.